Welcome back to But Why Though, the podcast, where you talk about the things in pop culture that matter and ask the question, but why though? Today's show is going to be all about the 17 years, is it 16 years or 17 years, Adrian?
16 years.
16 years. 16 year franchise of The Fast and the Furious. As always, I'm your host, Kate, and I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And with our special guest who has had about 20 years, would you say, on the street racing and car scene, Jay Pitlowin.
What up, though?
Oh, my God.
You'll fit in nicely. For this,
so. Adrian and Tom usually take the really good one, so I had to come up with something of my own.
I like it.
I like to know that you did your prep work.
We're happy to have you.
I listen to the podcast when I can, when I'm at the shop working. So, but I kind of delve in and out of them since I'm in and out of cars all day.
So, on a little heavier note, this is our first episode recording without Ryan and Tom, and we would like to thank them for all their hard work and laughs that they've brought us over the past 15 episodes and I believe the 11 BS corners. But unfortunately, they've had to step away from the project just so that they could devote more time to their family, and we wish them all the best in everything, and it's gonna be hard to replace them. But the show must go on, and we love you guys. Shall we delve into the cars?
Let's do it.
We shall. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, cool. So, as is the new/usual format, Adrian is actually going to be taking over this episode as well. So, without a further ado, Adrian, do you want to ask your question?
Yeah. So, as we usually do, just to get a sense of where everyone's at during the recording, what's your guys' involvement with the franchise? Do you have a favorite character, favorite movie? Let's hear it. Because I know this has, I think we. At least we have some, you know, sense of like, yeah, I'll go watch that. But this franchise has a big, love-hate relationship with the world, it seems. So what's your involvement like? What do you like? What about let's start with you, Jay.
I remember, you know, back when the movie first came out, it was a genuine love, and you see the movie kind of progress, and personally I'm kind of indifferent, but it's still an entertaining story nonetheless. But I don't know, I'd have to say that I would be a big supporter, but it's lost the continuity of car, like heart to car, you know.
Yeah.
You have a favorite character? I imagine the first one would might be your favorite since it's where it all started.
No, actually, surprisingly, Tokyo Drift would have to be my favorite movie, and Han would have to be my favorite character. Maybe it's like an Asian thing because I'm half Filipino, so I kind of understand where he's coming from. Gotcha. But yeah, I mean, he's kind of like practical, philosophical in nature, and that's kind of how I live my lifestyle too.
Hey, man, character driven.
He's always eating.
Why buy those? So you know it works.
He's my spirit animal.
You have Han hair, or you had Han hair, right?
Well, it's super long now. It's like more than halfway down my back, so I'm beyond Han at this point. I've ascended.
Are you in your final form now?
No, not even close.
What about you, Kate?
So for me, I really loved, I actually watched this a lot with growing up was the first one. I watched it every time it came on. I did not like Too Fast, Too Furious. I don't know why I hated it, but I hated it. And then my favorite one is actually Tokyo Drift as well. And now I have the Teriyaki Boys song in my head. So that's going to be playing the rest of the night. That being said, even though my favorite character is not in Tokyo Drift, I just really love Letty, Michelle Rodriguez's character. She's my favorite. I just love Michelle Rodriguez. And this is probably the movie when I saw it and I was like, okay, so a Latina doesn't just have to be like super hypersexual. She can just be like, I'm gonna kick your ass too. So this franchise, like, I just really love what they did with her.
Hey, I like both of those answers. For me, my uncle, you know, he was into like street racing and tuning up cars and stuff. He had an Eclipse back in the day, and that was probably way too low than it should be. So he watched this and she showed it to me, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. And I'm on the other side of what Jay said. I've stuck with them through all 8 movies. You know, their transition. I think their transition is justified, and we'll talk about that, you know, a little bit later. But I've stuck with it. The characters are so great that they could literally be doing anything, and I'd probably still go back and watch them do just about anything. Like, they could be in wheelchairs racing down a nursing home, and I'd probably still watch them if, like, Vin Diesel and The Rock were racing together.
Yeah, I could completely hate the franchise, but I'd still watch it just to see what would happen next.
Racing rascal scooters in space.
Yeah, exactly. Let's do it. Oh, sign me up.
We're going to copyright that idea right now.
Sign me up.
too late. Vin Diesel already came up with it. It's going to be in like 10 movies from now.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So who's your favorite character?
Ooh, I don't know if I have a favorite character. I think my favorite movie, honestly, would probably have to be this last one. I think it was just really good all around. I think the 7th one was just too crazy. Not that I didn't like it. It was just like too over the top.
Holding on to a spoiler with your fingertips wasn't in the realm of physics for you?
Hey, you know, they did some practical stunts in that movie that they actually did, so... Except for the jumping through the 2 buildings thing, they didn't really do that one. But this, the 8th one, was kind of just like more back to the roots of, you know, the first few, and kind of like harks on, because like Fast 5 is probably like one of the more popular ones, and it's more like Fast 5 than it is Fast 7 or like Fast and Furious 7. So that's probably my favorite character. I really like Hobbs, The Rock's character.
Yeah.
He is a lovable character, to say the least.
Yeah, I think he's a great character. You know, he's right on that morality that I think works for me in my own personal life, and he's really cool with his daughter, so it all works for me.
The only thing I remember of Hobbs is him taking a damn minigun off of a helicopter and walking down the street with it.
Hey, Daddy's got to go to work, Kate.
Cool and flexing out of a cast. Yeah. So,
you know, I just remember when I saw him, I think it was Fast 5, and I felt for sure he added like at least 7 or 8 more muscles from the movie prior.
Oh, no.
he was strapped up with muscles. There was muscles for days.
Yeah. For this latest one, he put on about 20 more pounds of muscle, like specifically for the role. So when he's in Hobbs mode, he's definitely like final form jacked mode.
Hold on. So The Rock put on 20 more pounds of muscle.
No, yeah, he worked out a lot for that role.
How does his body like support all of that?
Yeah, because I was watching Central Intelligence earlier today, just because it was on TV, and I was like, "Whoa, he looks a lot smaller there than he does in Fast and Furious 8." So, or Fate of the Furious. So, yeah, he gets super jacked, super into it.
Oof, I'm trying to think of like how much you would have to dedicate. I mean, just I guess. Because all these characters or all these actors, like the majority of them are pretty ripped. Like that amount of time in the gym. Because I'm betting like Vin Diesel is going to have to keep up with The Rock, right? Because aren't they like antagonists?
All he has to do is really work on his arms because he wears his shirt the whole time. So.
Okay.
I don't know if he puts in as much work.
Man, he's kind of arms. His arms probably as big as like both my legs put together. I'm so curious to see it in person. that's gonna be on my bucket list from now on, face to face with his arm, just his one arm. Even the weaker one.
You just hand him a Corona and then see, you know, how he takes it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, I mean, you know, since we're kind of going into characters, I guess I would say one of the reasons why I kind of love Han is he's one of the only characters that I know of it that his name was an ode to Star Wars. Like his full name is Han C.O. Leo.
Ah,
oh,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, like
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, his full character name was like Han C.O. Leo, which is like Korean.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it was a specific ode to Han Solo.
That's pretty cool. Man. That's really cool, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, damn, cool. Adrian, you're slacking.
I know, right? I am slacking. Because I read the name, but, you know, I'm not Asian. I'm half Iranian, remember?
What does that even mean? It's got to have a meaning to it.
Yeah, so, like, the characters are great, and I want to get into that. So let's go real quick through, you know, what we usually do. We usually go through a brief history of what we're talking about to give you guys a background. Since, I mean, it's a movie franchise and the storylines aren't that super in depth, I'm going to give some quick plot summaries for those who aren't familiar, or maybe you don't remember because it all blended in your mind, so you don't know which movie's which. So we're going to do a quick plot summary / history and then get into the but why those and spend the majority of our time on that. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So before we start, let me take a quick poll. Have you seen all of the movies?
No.
No.
Which ones haven't you seen?
The Fate of the Furious. I haven't gotten around to seeing that one.
Okay, that works then.
I have not seen Fast 4 or Fast 6.
Okay, you need to log out right now and go see those two amazing movies.
Get out of here. Now that works. I'll give you some plot summary. I won't go into too many of the details and, you know, huge spoilers. They've been out for 16 years, but I still want to leave some of that up to the imagination. So we start off with The Fast and the Furious in 2001. I will also be mentioning the Japanese titles because they have really great titles. In Japan, this franchise is called Wild Speed.
Huh.
Yeah. So it was directed by...
I actually like that more.
Yeah, I actually do too.
And once we go through it, you're going to be like, man, Japan came up with way better titles than the actual creators did. But it gets more and more ridiculous, just like the rest of the movies do. So it works.
Hold on. Can I ask a question real quick?
Yeah.
Why did Japan make their own titles?
No idea. Maybe translation stuff, maybe?
Yeah, maybe it just couldn't translate right. Maybe it translated into some really funky name title. Didn't make sense.
Because I was just asking, because, like, I know that, like, there's really, and I don't want to go off on a tangent, but, like, just really quickly, I know that there's, there's a whole bunch of anime that has to do with, like, car culture and stuff, so I didn't know if, like, maybe that lined up.
Maybe. I don't know. We can look into it more, and then if we find out, or if one of you guys know who's listening knows, add us. Let us know why. Why is it Wild Speed?
But why, though?
Yeah. And why is it not 17 other different titles of, you know.
Various car jokes.
Various car jokes and numerals. So the first one was directed by Rob Cohen. You may know him from Dragonheart, Stealth, XXX, The Boy Next Door with J-Lo. So, I mean, I love Dragonheart, but the other ones are kind of, you know, okay, I guess. So he got the idea. I think the funniest thing about this whole franchise, that the whole reason he even, like, made this, he got the idea from reading an article about illegal street racing in New York. And, you know, that culture, and then, you know, cartooning and stuff like that in Los Angeles. And that gave him the premise for the movie. And that's how we all got started. So the movie starts off with undercover cop Brian O'Connor, played by Paul Walker. He's trying to infiltrate the street racing world in California, Los Angeles specifically, to stop a series of 18-wheeler hijackings where they steal, like, electronics and stuff like that. Brian, being, you know, undercover, gets his way into the family, and I'll be referencing the family a lot, and that's just kind of, you know, the main cast of the show, or of the movie franchise. And in this first one, it's primarily Dom Toretto, played by Vin Diesel, and his girlfriend Letty, Michelle Rodriguez. There's some other characters, but they don't make any really reoccurring appearances, so I won't mention them too much. Brian falls for Dom's sister Mia, played by Jordana Brewster. If I mispronounce any of these names, I'm sure Kate will correct me. But just in case, I'm just trying to try to pronounce them the best I can, Kate, I promise.
I'll let some of them go. Just depends on how bad it is.
That'll work. So, you know, things happen, racing, gear shifts, all this stuff happens. And by the end of it, the family, Brian finds out that the family is the one who are doing the hijackings. After all this time, and Brian ends up having to save them from the truckers who are, you know, planning to fight back and shoot back at the family who's stealing these trucks. Very, very riveting, you know, plot and story development in it. I think it really just gets a lot of traction because there's nothing really like it in 2001.
No, not even close.
Yeah. So like it really does hit that market real well with, you know, like I said, I only watched it because my uncle who was into all of this stuff showed it to me. So I think that kind of shows, you know, how we got started. Made quite a bit of money when it came out, $207 million on a $38 million budget. So I think that in and of itself just says, all right, they're going to make a lot of these movies if they're making that much money with that small of a budget. Then we move on to Too Fast, Too Furious. And you're going to realize that they do this a lot, or try to do this with their titles, you know, bring the numericals into the Fast and the Furious. It gets old really quick, but it, you know, it works sometimes. It doesn't work others. The Japan title is Wild Speed times 2 or X2. I'm pretty sure it's times 2.
Yeah, I think it's times 2.
Yeah. So right. This one is directed by John Singleton, most famously who did Boys in the Hood. Rob Cohen is on this one because after the success of this one, he takes Vin Diesel and goes make Triple X. So this is the only movie without Vin Diesel in it. The premise of this one is Brian O'Connor, again, Paul Walker's character, is now living in Miami, and he's no longer a cop because he let Dom, Vin Diesel's character, go in LA after all the events that happened. We go back to street racing, and his new friends are primarily Tej, who's played by Ludacris, who I thought, like if you would have told me like Ludacris was going to be a big part of this franchise back when I first saw this movie, I would have thought you were crazy.
But same. And he's actually a good actor.
But he works really well. Like it just blows my mind how well it works.
I couldn't imagine the franchise without him, actually. Like, yeah. In all honesty.
Well, yeah. Around that time, you know, there was a lot of hip hop artists kind of, you know, crossing over to the movie industry, and I guess like Luda just saw a golden opportunity. And
yeah, it's crazy like how different his character is in this movie compared to the other ones too. Like he goes from just being like the person running the street races to being, you know, the tech hacker guy? Yeah, the tech guy, which is crazy.
That was like my favorite thing, was to see him as a tech guy. Like, yeah. Things,
you know, what I loved about the series is that he kind of like, he was never a tech guy, but they kind of like put him as a, like someone who knew circuits, you know.
Yeah,
it's just crazy how he kind of evolved into that like whole tech thing.
So what you're saying is you can evolve, Jay, and become like a tech guy for like when you're the people you do your street racing with, they decide to grow big and do heists and stuff. That's your role right there, Jay.
That's mine.
You get to be the tech guy.
No, I want to be the cool Asian guy. Like, oh,
that sits in the corner and eats snacks.
Yeah, that's. I tell you, that's my spirit animal. That's what I do every day.
And imparts like small words of wisdom.
If you want to call it that.
Yeah, he's real deep. He's real deep. So because of reason, Brian has to team up with Roman Pierce, his old friend from back in the day, and he's played by Tyrese, another musician who, will you again, if you would have told me that he'd be a big part of this, I would have said you were crazy too. But he works really well as a comic relief in the show or in the series. And then he also teams up with Monica, who's played by Eva Mendes, who's an undercover agent. And they basically are trying to take down a drug lord, Carter Verone, played by Cole Hauser. And this one does well again. I know some people don't like this one. I like this one just because I like Tyrese in it. I think it brings a little bit different, you know, comedy that you really don't get that much in the first one. And this one makes $236 million on a $76 million budget. So again, another big hit.
Oh, wow. Then we go.
Just to add on Too Fast, Too Furious, the special edition, like DVD, I don't know if you guys know that there's like a little 10-minute like add-on, like it shows Brian like moving from like running from the law from West Coast all the way to Florida.
What?
Yeah, I think it's something that they should have put in the theatrical cut, in my opinion. But.
Yeah, it makes the movie like 10 times more understanding.
Yeah, because at the end of the other one, he just like gives his keys and like all these cops come. I'm like, you didn't go to jail for that? Like you didn't... You said the
movie. Yeah, I mean, but there was no words. It was just like him just kind of going through like with background music, but it's still equally cool. It shows him like get that skyline, and it was really cool.
So then we move into the Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift, and Japan, this is Wild Speed 3.
So, hold on, Asa, I want you to take time and put the theme song in right now because it's so good. Yeah, okay, there we go.
So this one is directed by Justin Lin, and this is you're going to see Justin Lin direct the majority of these up until 6. So he takes the helm for the next few movies, and you can kind of see that with like the action and the way the movie is kind of done. And you know, this probably maybe I don't know. I would say that this probably his success in this franchise lets him do Star Trek Beyond earlier, and you can take that I guess as you will. Although, this is where it gets a little bit weird and kind of like the timeline of the movies. So even though this is the third one to be released, this story actually takes place in between the sixth and seventh movie-ish.
Wait, what?
Yeah, because it has Han in it and Han's in it later on. Yeah, so like it basically Han being in the movie makes this movie take place later on in the series.
I think I just showed how like little attention I paid to like actual continuity in these films.
So yeah. See, and you know, you didn't think that this franchise would do something like that, but they do. So the premise of this one is Sean, played by Lucas Black, lives in Japan with his father, who's in the military, and he's kind of like the stereotypical white guy out of place in Japan
with a terrible accent.
With a terrible accent.
I love the movie, but that accent is bad.
Yeah, he's not the best.
With the 27-year-old.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
This is my least favorite movie, just so clear. He becomes friends with Twinkie, played by Little Bow Wow again, you know, hip hop artist coming in strong.
Oh, and I think then, of his whole car.
And then we also have Han, who we've mentioned mostly, you know, throughout most of this, and Sung Kang. Is that the actor's name? Does that work? Mm-hmm. Everyone happy with that? All right, great.
Yeah.
So, and he helps them navigate the world. They both help Lucas. I'm gonna write this down.
Just say Sean.
Yeah.
And they both help Sean navigate the world of drifting in Tokyo. So we go back to racing and all this cool stuff. The main conflict of this is basically Sean's character likes the, you know, girl that the nephew of the head of the Yakuza likes, and that has this whole thing of like beef and stuff, and the nephew is known as the Drift King, so of course they're gonna have massive drift battles like that, and Han dies in this movie, which is important for later on. Maybe he dies, I don't know. They keep saying they're gonna bring him back, but I have no idea how they're gonna do it. So, like I said before, Vin Diesel has been in all of them except for Too Fast, Too Furious, because he does make a cameo at the end of this movie, and he basically, you know, shows up and races against Sean and says that he's a friend of Han's. But it's also kind of weird because at the end of the line that Vin Diesel says, or like they have like an interaction, and Sean's like, You know, this isn't a 10-second race, right? And then Vin Diesel says that he has all the time in the world, which he really doesn't, like in continuity, because in the seventh movie, all this stuff happens. But we'll come back to that. So this one does, like, you know, if you're talking about how much money the movies make, this one probably is on the lower spectrum. It made $158 million on a $85 million budget. I think just for obvious reasons that just doesn't have, you know, the main cast, and it has like a Vin Diesel cameo at the end. So it's kind of removed from everything that you know from the first two movies.
Yeah.
But it's okay because you guys like it. So, you know,
Really feel like it reinvigorated the franchise. The second movie just left such a sour taste in my mouth from coming from like a car scene perspective. Like I could only really handle the first maybe 15 minutes. But then after like that first, in the second movie, after the first race, I'm just like, you know what? It's time to go to bed. Like, I can't.
You don't like the down and back with Fonzie?
I mean, that scene was okay, but I guess from a car perspective, you know, when that movie came out, like those who were really into like imports, and they see him driving that Skyline R34, well, man, my mind just. I had to wear a helmet for that first like 15, 20 minutes. Like, cause it kept just blowing my mind over and over again. That car was so dope. Any import car guy, even now, like that Skyline is just iconic.
I think like so I think one of the things I can't talk from like the car scene, but I know one of the reasons I really loved Tokyo Drift was because of all the car shows that were going on at this time, like on TV. Because like Formula D was on G4, and then they started airing I was gonna say Top Gun, not Top Gun, but the British show.
Top Gear.
Yes.
It's so quick, it can destroy your entire face.
They were running those on G4, and I remember falling in love with them and watching them all the time. And then I tried really hard to get into cars, and Jay remembers this, but then it just, I couldn't because my brain didn't work that way. But but it was because of this movie.
You turned your little ignition off inside your brain. That was it. You put
yep.
You hung the keys up. Yep.
It kind of sputtered a little bit.
All right, so then we move into the fourth movie, which is simply known as Fast and Furious. In Japan, it's known as Wild Speed, all capital letters, Max.
Now that's a better name.
That's a much better name. They didn't even try with this one to make it punny. So again, we go back to Justin Lin directing it, and we also bring back all of the family that we get in the first movie for the most part. So this movie takes place 5 years after the first film, The Fast and the Furious. Now the family is now living in the Dominican Republic after, and the family in this you know part being, Dom and Letty and things like that. And Han is in this one as well because they say that they go way back, and this is kind of where it starts with Han and Dom being friends, I guess. So they're back to hijack and stuff. They're hijacking fuel tankers. But police pressure and stuff like that forces the family to split up. Months later, Dom's sister Mia gives Dom a call, and they find out that Letty has been killed. No, Dom's, ride or die has been killed. So the rest of the movie follows Dom trying to find out who killed Letty, and it makes him run into Brian, who's now back in law enforcement. He's now in the FBI. Basically, I assume after the events in the second film of catching the drug lord and things like that. Mm-hmm. So they team up to find out who killed Letty, and that's basically the premise of that one. This one, goes back to making big money, $383 million on an $85 million budget. So it brings in some big bucks. So
can I jump in here?
Mm-hmm.
Y'all are going to hate me, but I actually think I've seen all of them now.
Oh my god.
It's okay. And that's literally why I wanted to go through this so people can know like which movie is which, because they all do kind of blend together.
That's what I was gonna say. So like it's not because I do like these movies, but I never like went and sought them out. Like actually the only reason I saw Fast 7 in theaters was because Matt and I, my significant other, we went with Adrian to go watch it at the theaters. But yeah, you're reading the plot, and I'm like, wait, I totally remember that one.
Yeah, so this is the one that introduces Gal Gadot's character as like working with the people who killed him and stuff, and then like her and Dom tries to get at Dom, but Dom's like, nah, you ain't Letty and stuff. So that kind of introduces this movie. Really does it does introduce like the family that we know more or less now. Like it brings in all those characters. So in Fast 5, which a lot of people see as the best in the series, I don't know how that opinion changes with this latest one, but this one's really good. It's up until I watched Fate of the Furious, this was my favorite. Again, Fast 5, so they go back to doing the punny stuff. And in Japan, this one is named Wild Speed Mega Max.
Also better title.
Wow.
Yeah, so they go for it for sure. So the premise of this one, so unable to go back to the U.S., Dom, Brian, and Mia, because of all the stuff, made him a fugitive. They're fugitives for a lot of this franchise. They plan to steal $100 million from a corrupt Brazilian businessman. To do this, Dom and Brian bring in some extra help. So this is where we get everybody in, the next three movies. Everyone comes in at this point. So you have Vince from the first movie, who's like Dom's like best friend, but he was he went to go do other stuff in the and things like that. You have Tej and Roman from Too Fast, Too Furious, the tech guy and the comedic relief. You have Han from Tokyo Drift, and he's also has like a small part in Fast and Furious. Giselle, who's Gal Gadot's character, And then you have Leo and Santos, also from the previous movie, all come in and try to help to pull off this heist. So this is just one big heist movie, and it's really good. But I think what really, really puts it over the top, and I think what helps this franchise make so much money, is them bringing in The Rock to play Hobbs, who basically is trying to arrest them because they're like on like the top of the top, like wanted list in the US. So they bring in Hobbs, and Hobbs just brings in, you know, that badass character that I think, like, I can't picture this franchise without The Rock. Like, I'm pretty sure he's getting spinoffs after this is all over.
I could see that. Yeah. He's a definitely kick ass and take names type of character. Yeah.
Yeah. He's great. And this one, you know, is when the money really, really, really starts rolling in. So they make $626 million on a $125 million budget. I think a lot of that, again, comes back to bringing in this ensemble and bringing in The Rock. And then, like, the final chase scene with, like, the safe and stuff is just too good to not be like, all right, this is entertaining. So then we move into Fast and Furious 6, also known in Japan as Wild Speed Euro Mission.
That's better.
But Tanya, they get good. Like, they're very to the point about what's going to happen in this movie. So as you can imagine, like I said before, Justin Lin comes back, and guess what? They're in Europe in this movie. So the family, now retired from heist, because they always say, you know, during these big things, like, all right, one more, and then we're done. But they're never done. But they're still fugitives. They are in Brazil. No. Where are they at? They're in, like, some...
Like, Brazil isn't in Europe.
No, but... Isn't it, like, the Cayman Islands or something like that?
Yeah, at the start of the movie, they're, like, you know, in some smaller country. I can't remember where it is at this point, but it doesn't really matter because they're not there for long. They're approached by Hobbs, who offers to clear their records in exchange for helping him take down a mercenary organization led by Owen Shaw, who's played by Luke Evans. And... little do they know, after they accept this mission, that Letty is actually working with Owen Shaw. What? But she's supposed to be dead, right? So now we're getting twists in this franchise. So it's mostly them trying to take down Owen Shaw, but a lot of it is Dom trying to, like, get Letty back because she doesn't remember anything because of the crash that she was in, like, the fourth movie. And she doesn't really remember at the end of it. So... it's a fun movie. It's probably, like, on the lower tier of the list, in my opinion. Like, it's not that memorable, to be honest. And, like, the whole Letty thing, I'm like, all right, just show me more Hobbs, please. this one still does make, you know, quite a bit of money. Not as much as the last one, though. So it makes $550 million on $160 million budget. And then we get Furious 7.
Hold on. Now I can say I have seen all of them except for Fast 8.
Right. So then we get Furious 7, which is also known as Wild Speed Sky Mission. And for those of you who have seen Fast 7 or Furious 7, it's because there's lots of planes and jumping out of planes with cars and stuff. So
Japanese writers, like, on board to, like, the American writers, right? Now.
So this one is directed by James Wan. I guess Justin Lin might have been working at Star Trek Beyond at this time, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's the continuity.
That's probably how it lines up. And James Wan, you might know him from, actually, which I didn't, you know, think put two and two together, but he does a lot of, like, the horror movies. So Saw, Insidious, Conjuring.
Yeah, so he, like, it may be a different episode all on his own, but James Wan he's one of the people credited with the new wave of horror.
Yeah, so, like, because I didn't even know he, because I, you know, we were watching these movies, you really don't think to go look at the directors, but I think it's I never would have thought that he would have directed any of these movies, but he did. I think he did a pretty good job. I enjoyed the over-the-topness of the movies. I think this is, like, them really taking into consideration how ridiculous the franchise is getting and just going all out with it. So this film chronologically takes place after Tokyo Drift, or, like, concurrently, kind of. So, and you'll get this from the premise when I go through it. So the family's back in the U.S. after, you know, getting their records cleared, and they're moving. They're Dom and Mia and Brian, all are kind of, and Letty now are all back in L.A. living the life. Brian and Mia now have a kid, so he's settling down, being a family man. Everything's great until Deckard Shaw, who's played by Jason Statham, comes in and ruins everything. And he is the brother of Owen Shaw, the villain from the previous movie. And he shows up and starting down to hunt the family, mainly kind of in the defense of his brother, but because some other like tech stuff and like evil organization stuff. But he actually kills Han in Tokyo Drift. We think after watching Tokyo Drift, he dies in a car accident and his car blows up. But really, Jason Statham's character runs into him and basically blows him up and like helps, you know, kill Han because, you know, Han's part of that team that, you know, basically put his brother in prison. So then connects that cameo, and then it kind of missed, like, because that's when after he finds out after like Deckard Shaw. No, after. Hold on. There's a lot going on. Okay, hold on.
Yeah, the franchise kind of goes all over the place. But for some reason, when you watch it all, it just makes sense.
Yeah, yes. So this is where I mentioned earlier that cameo in Tokyo Drift really not making that much sense, because after Owen Shaw blows up the house that they live in, the Dom and all of them, he goes to Tokyo to find out what happened to Han and basically collect his body. But then he says he has all time in the world. Like, so I don't know how that really works. So
somebody just blew up your house.
Yeah, but oh, I got all the time in the world. I was like, all right, whatever. But they're approached by Mr. Nobody, who's played by Kurt Russell, and he works for like a shadow government off the books thing, and he wants them to help find God's Eye, a device that can find anyone anywhere with movie science, basically. And in exchange, he'll let the family use God's Eye to track down Deckard Shaw. A lot of crazy stuff happens in this movie. But the big point is that it makes so much money. It makes $1.5 billion on a $190 million budget. So it cleans absolute house. And we'll talk about this a little bit later on, but I don't think I've ever seen, because for those who are familiar, Paul Walker died mid-filming of this movie, and they had to bring in his brothers as stand-ins. And the end send-off in this movie is probably the best I've ever seen in any movie for any character who has, you know, passed away during filming. So great. And we'll talk about that a little bit later so I don't cry.
I was like, we can talk about the send-off. I mean, we can talk about the send-off here because I think I wanted to talk more about, like, I think it works within the context of, like you already said it, like, this is one of the best ones, because I wasn't highly invested in Paul Walker's character, and I was bawling in the middle of the theater. Like, I was – it. Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, grown man bawled at that. I will not confirm nor deny that some tears came out, maybe, possibly. Could have been allergies. I don't know. But it was definitely a really strong moment, because – anyone who has followed the series and who has had a parallel to the car culture knows that he was like a really big, you know, car enthusiast. And even the car that he was in, the Supra, actually came from his personal collection.
Yeah, and he was leaving a charity like gala like right before. So like, let me wrap up Fate of the Furious real quick, just because I want to say the Japanese.
We'll give him his whole section.
And then we'll jump into the but why those. I think that's a big but why though for it. So Fate of the Furious. I think that's their best.
that's the best that's their one.
Best one.
I gotta hear the Japanese. You got the Japanese name?
Yeah,
for it?
it's Wild Speed Ice Break. And they get on some ice in this movie. And since so people haven't seen it, I don't want to, you know, ruin like the big plot stuff in it. Basically, all you need to know is that Dom turns his back on the family, and the family's basically trying to figure out why. At the time that I wrote these show notes, and I don't think it's made too much more than this, and I guess around the time of this recording, it's already over $1 billion on a $250 million budget. Just about a month after its release. So it's basically, you know, almost made what the previous movie made in a month. So it's going to hit big, big numbers. So you might be asking yourself how, Adrian, you just went through the most ridiculous plots of crazy movies. All of these aren't any really big name actors. How is this movie closing in on $5 billion total? Like, how is this one of like the biggest movie franchises ever? And we're going to talk about it in the But Why Those. So for the first, but why though, Jay, I'd like to turn to you just so you can elaborate a little bit more. You said you are involved in, you know, car club culture. How has this movie affected that at all? Can you talk a little bit? I know Kate was telling me you do some of like the Paul Walker Memorial stuff. Would you be able to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So here in Texas, I remember when he passed away, he passed away in November, maybe like not 2 years or two weeks later. They actually held like a memorial, like car meet. I don't know if for those of you who don't know, like what car meets are, usually what people do who are invested in the car culture, they pretty much just pick spots around their city and they meet up, you know, all shapes, all forms of cars. And the theory of it is to, you know, kind of just get to know, you know, your brother or sister in the car club culture. You know, you talk about cars and just share what you love, share passions. And, you know, they kind of show that even going into the first movie, because, you know, car, this stuff it's not new stuff, you know. Going back, I'll just, you know, point out that it's been recorded that, you know, street racing, illegal street racing, you know, has been recorded in the 50s and 60s. Car clubs have been like delved back to the 50s and 60s, and they were sponsored by sometimes dealerships to help like promote new vehicles. And that's kind of, you know, what happens today. Like even now, you know, the car club that I'm in, you know, recently we were sponsored by a dealership, and what we do is, you know, we pretty much, we put a face to the name of the dealership, you know, like if people are like, man, where'd you get that car? You know, you go to this dealership.
Do you want to plug the name of your car club?
Yeah, it's Team Cyanide San Antonio. It's a Cyan only car club. So I cross my fingers and pray that we'll be around for the next couple of years since Cyan died. But, you know, when you go into a car club, for those who aren't really like, they've never heard this stuff before, a car club is supposed to be, you know, a gathering of the shared love of what kind of car you have. And you do different things. You do shows, meets, cruises. Sometimes, like, you know, every now and again, our club will be affiliated with like community service, toy drives, stuff like that. So you can use your power for good, and then you can equally use your power for evil, illegal street racing, you know, stealing, heisting trucks to steal electronics.
I was going to ask, like, so at least taking out the context of, you know, them stealing fuel from fuel tankers and stuff, in that first movie, like when we first see Paul Walker's character go to that first race to kind of get in that world, how accurate is that, you know, that gathering of people, like when, you know, they're like, it's not how you stand by a car, it's how you race your car.
Yeah,
like,
you know, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm pretty sure anyone who was, you know, in the street race, which it was relatively small back then, you know, people, I mean, the car, like modifying your car and racing your car is obviously nothing new, but it was a really, you know, specific niche. Not a lot of people. Everyone kind of knew everybody, you know, back in the 90s, everyone would meet up, or, you know, let's just say 2000, 2001, everyone would meet up to a certain spot, and we would actually, like, they would go race, I mean, even in front of, like, Air Force bases.
Oh, wow.
Because, Brook City Base, for those of you who are San Antonio listeners, Brook City Base on military, it was, like, this long strip of, like, road. It was perfect. Cops were never there, and they would spend hours just street racing out there, because there was no one to complain. And on that part of the base, nobody was there. So it was really funny, because it was kind of like, wow, this is pretty accurate. So people would do it for money. People would do it for free, bragging rights. And
sometimes the respect is more important.
Yeah, and it's funny. So going into the fourth movie, I love how they kind of elaborated on this. There's a section in there. I forgot what's his name. He always says, like, muscle beats import every time. And there's always been, ever since the introduction to imports, there's always been this big conflict between domestic and imports. You know, one's not necessarily like equal to another. And it's crazy. Like the racing scene is always, it's going to be there. You know, the car club scene is always going to be there. And there's always shifts. But based on the first movie, it was pretty fun to watch, because it was pretty accurate. And it I don't know. It's really funny. It's like you would watch it and you're just, you tell yourself, man, am I in this movie? Is this other? Because it was really, I mean, obviously it was kind of glorified Hollywood driven, but the basic principle of it was pretty spot on. Even going to, like, you know, when the cops show up and stuff, that's how it is. You know, everyone just kind of scrambles to get out of there.
That's awesome. Like, yeah. That's great. I mean, I guess I want to know too, because you kind of mentioned it, like everybody gets together and talks, you know, and joins over their love for the cars as well. Would you say that, you know, your team is your family or your
oh, yeah.
family?
So I joined my team back in 2007, and I will do anything for my car club. Like, and it's not necessarily just going based on car, which obviously that's the reason why we get together. You know, we have buy meetings. We go to shows. We actually just went, we finished up a show. It's called All Team Bash, and plug in for All Team Bash. You can check them out on Facebook. They are they're like this, I don't know. They're just like a group of people that they pretty much sponsor stuff for car clubs. So pretty much like car clubs come together. Like we met up at San Antonio Raceway, and you know, you get to know your fellow car clubs. Yeah. I mean, there was tons of people there. I'd have to say realistically, there's probably maybe about 400 cars, maybe about 500 people there.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. I'm just basing it based on like loose pictures, but I mean, the whole parking lot was just filled to the rim, and it's cool because they have like team participation stuff. And they even have this thing where, like, they had a push drag race this year where, like, you get empty cars and you have to push the car. Like, your team members have to push the car, and you're racing two people, and whoever pushes the car first wins. And then, like, they have trophies and stuff.
That sounds really fun.
Yeah. It's really good time. And it's a way for you to get to know your car club. You know, you guys spend really quality time, and then you get to know other clubs. There was some clubs that were there. Envious was there. Bangers was there, and like they showed up, like, I mean, there was like 10, 15 cars, 20 cars strong. There was even Jeeps that were there. There was like big truck clubs. They were there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Like I said, there's good, but then, you know, you have your people go and you always hear the bad things, you know, street racing turns into accidents and revving and burning out, peeling out. That's just, you're always going to have those guys that just, I don't know, for whatever reason, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's also...
Before you get into that, I want to focus on the family part of what you just said, because I think it's a big overarching theme of the movies. Like, from the Fast and the Furious down to Fate of the Furious, no matter what movie it is, family is a huge part of that. And to hear you kind of reiterate that your car club is your family, I think goes to why these movies are able to keep being made, because all of like the action and stuff like that is fun, but when I'm watching this, I'm like, man, yeah, family is super important. And I think that just goes to show just like the overarching themes of, because, you know, at this point, who's related? Tom, Dom and Mia, everybody else is friends. Everybody else is coming in, so that family can extend past those bloodlines. And even when they do meet when they're in other countries and they are, you know, going to race against these other people, after it's all said and done, the family, you know, the family of the Fast and the Furious and those new people that they're meeting at these other countries when they're racing against them, after Vin Diesel ever beats them all the time, you know, they become part of the family too. Like, they're interconnected, and that doesn't go away throughout the whole thing. I think the cast does a lot of that, because I really feel when I'm watching that they do have really great chemistry. If you look at any interview with them, or if you like follow Tyrese on Facebook, which I do for, I don't know why I just always have, or like Vin Diesel, like they're always talking about each other, even if they're not filming. Like, those people really are a family outside of those movies.
I also wanted to point out too, Adrian, when we ran a poll today on our Twitter @ButWhyThoughPC, the question was, why does Fast and the Furious matter? And the answers could have been family, diversity, car culture, or explosions. The one that overwhelmingly won was family.
Yeah, so I think – thanks for voting, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for participating. You know, I'm going to have to agree and disagree at the same time. I'm going to say that they touch base with a really integral part of like car culture. But I, in all honesty, you know, I think with the passing of Paul Walker, like the core of like car culture, I'm going to say it kind of went with Paul Walker as well. And the reason why I say that, because for one, he was one of the only, like the true like car enthusiasts. And so, you know, in his take, like his opinion is no longer there. So they don't really have, you know, that big car enthusiast kind of opinion when they're writing and making these movies. And two, you know, and if you notice, like, when they broaden the spectrum of the movie making, so they kind of like, you know, 1, 2, and 3, and even like a little bit of 4, there's a really strong, you know, race background to the movie. But as 5, 6, 7 come out, it's a lot less racing and a lot more, you know, generalized. And what you had pointed out earlier, you know, family is what brings these movies together. And one thing that a lot of sequels kind of don't, they're not successful in most of the time, is having a strong cast, because you want to see this cast evolve. That's how some sitcoms can work and some sitcoms can't. Some sequels can work and some sequels can't, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that they do it well enough to make, you know, $1.5 billion for their, I think a lot of that goes to, I don't know if this is true or not, but right at, like, I don't know if, you know, their interviews and their stuff and them talking about each other lends to people thinking that these people really are that close. But if you go back and you look at, you know, awards acceptance speeches after Furious 7,
heartbreaking.
Or basically anything Vin Diesel and Tyrese talking about Paul Walker is, you know, heart tugging. And I can't watch them without, mm-hmm. you know, thinking that like those dudes really did all love each other. And I think it just goes to show that celebrity deaths do matter. And not to like plug one of our, you know, first episodes, but we did do a whole episode on celebrity deaths. And that's why I think, you know, those deaths aren't funny. Like, I don't find Paul Walker memes, because I know they're everywhere. I just don't find those funny at all, because like, that dude did have a family. He was a great guy. Like you said, he did do charity events. He did do all this stuff. And to like make memes about the way he died, I just don't think it's very funny. Just because he had friends and family, and you can see that by looking at Vin Diesel talk about Paul Walker.
Yeah, it was really tragic what happened. And you can tell even like a year, 2 years later, you know, they still talk about it. They still miss him. You know, they'll go on these random Twitter and video tangents and how they wish he was still there. Like, obviously it really impacted their personal life as well. It's really sad.
Yeah, I think this is probably a good transition moment to go into Paul Walker. So as I've said on other casts and stuff, I'm really into, I mean, this isn't true crime, but I'm really into true crime, and I was going to bring down everything. But all you need to know is November 30th, 2013, Paul Walker and his friend Roger Rodas were at a charity at one of his charities, Reach Out Worldwide for Victims of Typhoon Yolanda. And they ended up crashing the Porsche Carrera GT. He died and they ended up suing, his family ended up suing Porsche for wrongful death. Porsche, as you see, most of the time, they pretty much did nothing about it. That being said, like Jay and Adrian touched on, like, his death was felt everywhere, and it wasn't just in the it wasn't just from Vin Diesel or Tyrese, it was also from the fans. And I think, Jay, what you were talking about how he was really intrinsic into how him and car culture were one and the same, and he brought in the people who were car guys, car women, and car, you know, just car enthusiasts in general. And I pulled off of the website for the San Antonio Paul Walker Memorial Races, and I just wanted to read this, and I want you all to, I want listeners out there to just kind of think about what I'm about to say and try and think about Paul Walker after listening to this. So, Paul Walker's love for motorsports spanned well beyond the Fast and the Furious franchise. An inspiration to all humans, was a big supporter of the racing community. Paul passed away 4 years ago, and at this event, we take time out to remember what he has done for the automotive community. We also celebrate his life by taking part in activities that were dear to him. The day starts off with roll racing down the strip. In the afternoon, we begin our car show and drift exhibition. As the sun sets, we open up for full-on drag racing, DJs, laser light show, dancing, and fun. We will have drifting going on while drag racing is underway, making Saturday night action-packed. At 11 p.m., we will invite anyone with a vehicle to drive down the track in a tribute to Paul Walker. This was one of the highlights of last year's event, as the sun broke through the clouds and shed rays of light as if he was watching us honor him. We have several activities arranged for kids, so bring out the Power Wheels, RCs, and bicycles. We will have bouncy castles, balloon animals, and a playscape set up for the little ones. A full day of fun for friends and family. Don't forget to sign in on our Paul Walker Heroes wall. A portion of all proceeds will be donated to charity.
I remember the first time it was kind of like the year that he passed, they a couple weeks later they set up this meet. It was on De Zavala and I-10 for those of you who are in the San Antonio area. Kind of like the north side of town, and they were going to cruise like all of Loop 1604, which is this massive loop freeway. But at the very beginning, there was this Honda. God forbid, it was a Honda. he actually like sped up and he slammed into some car. I'm sure it's on YouTube, but he hit a car. And the car had a lady with kids, and I guess he didn't have insurance, so he got out of the car and he like took off, and it just left such a sour taste in the first year. Like no one wanted to do it like the following year, but then it got really organized, and I went to the like years following, and they were just, man, it's crazy that how many people showed up to these you know memorial meets. It was nuts.
And for you, like when you went, like, was it, could you feel everybody's connection? Like not even with like the character that he played, but like with him?
You know what, when you're there, you kind of just get, you just get kind of stuck in the nostalgia of usually most car events. Right. So okay. the second year that they did it, it was at a mall. They got permission to kind of fill up a mall parking lot, and there was so many people there that they filled up three mall lots and a two car garage.
Wow.
I mean there were there were Vipers, NSXs, there were Porsches, there was Hondas, there was Mustangs, and everyone was just walking around enjoying themselves. At the very end of it, you know, they just wanted to thank like Paul Walker and this and that. And then the last 2 years it's been at San Antonio Raceway. The San Antonio Raceway one was really, really good. Like the first one, which was 2 years ago, because it was so cold. It had just got done raining. It was like 40 degrees outside. And I would have to say there was probably about like 300 or 400 people there. It was nuts. And at the end of everything, once they gave, because it was a car show, once they gave the awards, everyone got on the strip and they pretty much like cruised out of the strip onto the freeway.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty dope.
I think I also want to say too, Adrian, like doing this episode, once we knew we were going to bring Jay on, I was like, well, I'm going to look up the Paul Walker stuff because I know he goes to these memorials. And I like personally on air want to extend like an apology to you whenever, because I have posted like two of those memes, and reading up on his impact in the community, reading up on the impact that it had on his family, on the friend, like sincerely, I don't know why I would ever have done that. Like if you don't know who Paul Walker was outside the movies, you should look it up.
Yeah, because like it outside of him just, you know, bringing a lot to the franchise, like he was just generally a good dude. He had two kids. Yeah. Like it was his death was just tragic and could have been totally prevented. And he wasn't even driving. And it's just like a whole lot of things to it. It's definitely one of those deaths like that should not have happened. You know, kind of, you know, harking back to our Anton Yelchin, when I covered Anton Yelchin, like it was one of those things that shouldn't have happened. And, you know, the world is lesser for him not being here, not only for the franchise, of course, but just for all of the stuff that he did outside of it. But the fact that, you know, just listening to Jay talk about, you know, the events personally, I think it really just goes to show, you know, how much of an impact he actually had, you know, despite, you know, people would might say like his lack of acting ability, but just the stuff he did outside, I think is way, way more important.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be lying if I said he, like, you know, him personally in this movie franchise, that he didn't really put a big, strong reflection of car enthusiasts. Because a lot of car enthusiasts knew how he was, you know, outside, you know, the movie realm, and that he really was, you know, and there's little tangents that even if you don't know anything about cars, you can look up like almost every movie except for the first one. He always represented Nissan. He always had a Nissan in like every movie because he's like a really big Nissan fan, you know. So it's just those little things. And I hope that like those of you who don't know about car culture, is car culture is so strong, but it's like this, I don't know, this unwritten law, this like just because you don't really know about cars, it's you can always, like, with the help with like car clubs and car culture, like you can really get understand it. You know, there's been like these massive trends lately, you know, because I work on cars. I'm a professional install technician that I've been a professional for about, you know, 15, 16 years. And going, like, seeing the transition of what these car companies do now, they gradually make it harder and harder for people like me to work on cars, and people like you and, you know, viewers at home or listeners at home to want to work on their cars. You know, it's these car industries that make it harder. Like, I actually read an article just recently that the big, like, automotive groups, you know, your Chevy, Ford, Toyota, even Nissan, they're trying to pass this law that even though you buy a vehicle, you own the vehicle, they put a lot of like patents in the software in computer BCMs in the cars that they keep the patents on. So like, even though you physically own the car, you don't own the software rights. So if there's a problem with the car, you like have no choice but to take it to like a dealership, and then they could charge, you know, practically whatever they want at that point. And if you're like a small time, you know, mom and pop shop, small garage, and you work on this stuff, like, you have to buy into that, and it's like expensive equipment. So they're trying to phase out like these mom and pop shops that may or may not know what they're doing. And it's really sad because people like me, who I mean to void, you know, manufacturers' warranties as soon as I get cars, and it's going to make it progressively harder for me. But yeah, you know, car enthusiasts, those who are like, who delve strongly into these cars, you know, if you're in car clubs and if you're part of the community, they have answers. I mean, they've, you know, a check engine light comes on and you're like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. And you can get on a car forum, like a Nissan forum, and be like, help me, this is what happens. And you'll get a response like 10 seconds later from 14 guys, all of them with the same answer. And sure enough, like, that's your problem, because the car culture is just that strong. You know, we do it for the love of the game. We don't necessarily do it for, you know, for the most part, for anything else, you know?
So yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, because after, awesome. and not to take away from what you said, and this, obviously this is like the fantasy character doing this, but at the end of Fast Five, after like he basically got $12 million, Ludacris went back and opened up like his own shop, so literally he could work on cars without people getting ripped off.
Yeah. I mean once you're a part of this culture, like, obviously I've kind of worked my way in, and it's so hard to get out. Like, I tell my wife all the time, I have a BA in marketing management, and I just don't see myself using it because I can't get out of this car industry. Because, you know, one thing I tell myself is, even though, like, I may not, like, you know, obviously no one wants to work, you know, everyone's supposed to sit at home and just do nothing all day. Like, that's like a dream thing to do. But I don't complain about my job. Like, I love talking about cars all day, and I love working on cars all day. And my clients, you know, they see that, and that, you know, that makes them come back. Because it goes beyond just a paycheck. And a lot of car guys, people who open their own shops, you know, they do it because they love to do it, not necessarily because, you know, they do it for the money or they do it for the name or whatever, discounts at certain things. It's because, you know, so most guys, you know, we love to do it. We spend thousands of dollars on parts we don't need. Like we have to work two jobs to, you know, afford this stuff. But when we get it, it's like, man, it's like newborn baby for real.
And I think that's like really, so it obviously has to do with people and not so much with car parts. But I think one of the great things that I want to point out, like, so Vin Diesel, I mean, he's produced a lot of these movies, right, Adrian?
Yeah.
Yeah. So two things. One, I want to point out a lot of these names are hard to pronounce. But a lot of these names are hard to pronounce because a lot of them aren't well-known actors. And it's probably one of the most diverse casts I have ever seen. And what you're saying about you're doing it because you love to do it and it's not about the money, casting actors like that in an industry that says, hey, you should have big name actors or just white actors, or like taking those risks to bring people on like that, which I hate characterizing as taking a risk because obviously I like – I'm only speaking from like the market wise. It's a reason why, you know, Matt Damon was in Great Wall. Like money wise, that's a risk for studios to make. And Vin Diesel saying, we're going to get everybody. And like, we're going to make this one of our priorities to have a representative cast. Like you talking about, and I don't know if Vin Diesel's in car culture or not, but I think his love of these movies is what has driven him to create the cast and family that he has in these films.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like it's a majority non-white cast. Like how often do you see that with movies that are making $1.5 billion?
And with multiple movies.
Yeah, like it's really crazy. And I think the best thing about it, or one of like the best things about their cast is that they're not, at least when I'm watching it, I don't see anyone overly stereotyped. Like the black guy is the tech guy.
Yeah.
The, you know, Han is like this cool, you know, Han isn't the tech guy. And they could have
I'm
the tech guy.
I'm going to say that's pretty stereotypical because, you know, Asian guys are such cool guys, you know.
I know some pretty not cool Asians.
Oh, man, you got the wrong kind of Asian friends in because you need me as a friend.
Okay, that works. That works. You're a lot cooler than me, Jay. So.
I think one of the things I like about like with the character of Han or even like the other Asian men in the film, like they're shown as being really, really masculine. And one of the things that's going on in Hollywood and in pop culture right now, when it comes to casting Asian men, like we're actually starting to realize, or, you know, because the Asian American community is coming out and saying, hey, you can't just cast us as this or that. Like we should be able to play these strong roles too.
Yeah, you never see Han doing Kung Fu in Fast and the Furious. Yeah. I don't even know if he can actually fight. Does he actually even ever fight anybody? I don't think he like ever like hand-to-hand fights anybody.
Does he, Jay?
No, not that I know. You know, I think, in the seventh movie, wasn't that Tony Jaa in that fight scene?
Yes, I think it was.
Damn, yeah, so cool. Sure Tony Jaa's so cool. Anyone who just rides an elephant is just amazing.
For those of you
because he loves elephants, not because of like anything, you know, animal like cruelty related, but
like Tony. I was gonna say for those of you who don't know, Tony Jaa is a Thai martial artist who is very big in The Protector and Ong Bak, and
yeah, I think another thing, and Kate might push back on this on me a little bit, but I don't think the men are like. Because it could have been very easy for Fast and the Furious to go full Expendables and just get, you know, seven dudes who look like The Rock and, like, make them drive cars. But in terms of, like, the men on screen, other than, like, The Rock and Dom and Vin Diesel's always going to be, you know, that kind of, like, 80s action star build. I mean, you have Han, you have Tyrese, you have Ludacris. They're not kind of like the stereotypical action movie star. And you know, Dom might have like that 80s build and so does The Rock, but they have like these moments of vulnerability that you really don't get in 80s action star movies.
Well, that's what I was gonna say too. Like there is some body diversity between the men in the cast. There isn't that much for the women, but there is for the men. And then I would say too, like even though these guys are I think they are the Expendables now with The Rock, Jason Statham, you know, I think they are the Expendables, but in a different way. Because you're right, they do show vulnerability and they show connections mm-hmm. and empathy, and they're not just, I'm going to blow this up and that's it. They care about, even if it's just them caring about the family and the people they're interacting with personally, like a lot of the times, like men can't be sad or men can't be this emotional. And a lot of the stuff that happens in these movies, they're driven by their emotions.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's for sure. Plus, they have such continuity with the same characters that you get to see, you know, them really expand on their emotions over time.
Go see The Furious if you want to see some emotional heart tugging moments. Like, I did not expect that movie to get that emotional after the seventh movie, you know, cause you know, that movie's really not that emotional until like the last send-off scene. But Fate of the Furious has some moments where I'm like, damn, that was some actual emotion you just showed right there, yeah. Vin Diesel. Like,
and I also want to point out body diversity sucks for women in this movie, but strong women are there.
Yeah. I honestly think their women in the cast really do cover basically everything. Like, you have Jordana Brewster, who's Mia, who kind of takes on like that maternal motherly role, but she also like drives cars in like a lot of these scenes and a lot of these high scenes. Gal Gadot, you know, skinny, petite, but she'll shoot you right in the face at like a moment's distance. Michelle Rodriguez, of course, like badass to the T.
Yeah. Like, they are all petite, which I think is a problem. But you're right, like, they embody different characteristics, like in their characters, like they're not just the same character over and over again. Like, mm-hmm. if you put these women in a room, they're probably not going to get it. Like, it's the same when you have male characters, they have so many different personalities. If you put them in a room, they may get together at the end, but those personalities may not mesh right off the bat. And with a lot of movies, especially action movies, if you put all the women in the same room, they're all going to have the exact same opinions, the exact same skills. And with Fast and the Furious, they eat, like, they're integral members of the team, because they are written to be individual characters apart from the team as well.
Yeah, it's great. Cause like, even when you have like the male, you know, you have the tech guy, you have the muscle and things like that. And you even get that when you look at the female cast as well, because Nathalie Emmanuel, who plays the tech girl, mm-hmm. and you might know her from Game of Thrones. You know, she's the tech girl. Like, she's not going to fight probably ever, but she brings that opposite to Tej. And then they actually brought in like female MMA fighters, you know, Ronda, like Michelle Rodriguez.
Went down with Ronda Rousey.
And she's also fought Gina Carano. Like, she's fought two MMA fighters. I don't think that she should have won any of those, especially with Ronda.
I don't either.
But you know, they were great fight scenes. And then in the eighth movie, you have, I'm going to butcher her name. Charlize Theron. Yeah. She's a pretty goddamn good villain. Like,
yeah, no, she's
pretty good.
Yeah, she's a great villain, and like her other stuff too. But like, no, I was gonna say that too. Like, my step for, because I, you know, we always got to keep pushing. What can we do to make it better?
Yeah,
I think I want to see somebody with Gina Carano or Ronda Rousey's body type as an actual character versus somebody who is to be fought. Then I'll be really happy.
You know what I mean? I just love the fact that they even give the opportunity to empower women in roles like these, just in general, because let's just say, going back to car culture, you know, car culture is pretty massively, you know, chauvinistic. You know, you don't really see females in car culture unless they're, you know, models or something like that. And that's just not true, because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, respected females in car communities that they work on their cars, or I even have colleagues who are, you know, installers that are female, and we as a group, we support them, you know, because in the end, if they know what they're talking about, they know what they're doing. Yeah. We're all one and the same, because we're all part of the same industry. So, you know, generally speaking, I love the fact that they empower women. In general, they give them really strong, you know, kick ass.
There are a few times where like Mia has to take the car from Paul because she's just a better driver, right?
No.
Okay. I thought
just
that happened.
Like, just Paul's about to like jump out of the car, basically.
Okay. I thought that happened. Yeah. Never mind.
But no, but she definitely is in on the heist in like the fourth movie, like the start of the movie. She's right there. It's like she can handle herself, even having that maternal role, which really doesn't happen. So we're running. low on time, but I do want to mention one more But Why, though, I think is really important to why this is so successful. Outside of the family tones and the really great cast, I think this franchise has evolved in a way that let it be this successful. So you basically go from Point Break, you know, esque movie to a basically like a pseudo superhero movie. Like, these dudes are basically the Avengers at this point. and you know, if you did just street racing for, you know, 8 movies, I don't think they'd be at this point. So as a superhero movies and like these larger than life, you know, actor or like these larger than life characters are becoming the basis of like Hollywood movies, they moved with it, I think, super well to make it different enough where it's not the Avengers or like just the Justice League.
It's a better Expendables. That's what I want to say. It's a better Expendables.
Yeah, because I think they
with
do
family.
It correctly.
Yeah.
With family.
Yeah.
It's Expendables with a story.
Expendables with a story, and comedy doesn't seem forced because you actually bring in people who can do comedy. So I think what a lot of these, and even I think they bring the diversity much better than a lot of these superhero movies do.
Marvel's getting
better at it. They really, really are. But for a long
DC
time, like
sucks.
That, they were, that's DC and Marvel, one of their big knocks is just not doing diversity.
Yep.
And they've been doing, and the Fast and Furious franchise has been doing it way before then. And I think you get the family and like the overtones more in these Fast and the Furious franchise than you do in, you know, Avengers or Batman versus Superman, where they're only friends because their moms have the same name. I
don't go ahead, Jake.
I'm gonna have to agree. You know, when you look at the numbers, what you were pointing out, you know, earlier, that as soon as they started expanding and really delving into a more broader spectrum of the movie, you know, and not, don't get me wrong, like if they did eight movies with just street racing or whatever, I'll be in the movie theater every weekend. But at the same time, you know, it's not entertaining. It's as much as entertaining for me, it may not be as entertaining for you. So they really kind of integrated, you know, several cultures, several, you know, ethnicities, you know, to come together, and they really made this successful formula. And you can see it in the numbers, because, you know, when you look back in the Tokyo Drift movie, you know, it was really strong in car culture, and more particularly in Japanese car culture, which people in America don't really understand. It made the least amount of money, but once they started broadening the spectrum, you know, that the money made, you know, it shows in the revenue.
I think the last point that I want to end on is, I guess, my biggest thing from what I see the Fast and Furious doing and what I hope people will take from it, especially action movies. Diversity does sell. Like, stop using the excuse that it won't. It does.
Yeah, and you don't have to get the same characters over and over again. Like, you could try other people and it'll work.
Exactly.
It'll
help.
Mm-hmm. So. This is 2017, people. Whitewashing doesn't work anymore.
I was gonna get Matt Damon to come in and sit in for you, Jay, but I figured I'd actually ask you this time.
No, I appreciate it. You know, I had a blast. This was really fun. I really enjoy like talking about this. I guess even more so because this is something that I've literally, you know, lived through. It's not necessarily something that, you know, you kind of just watch the movies as they come out. You know, I was out there, you know, on the side of the road in the late 90s and early 2000s, you know, watching these street races happening. And, you know, I actually had, you know, on a personal relationship, a lot of these guys that would go out there and do it. And as you grow into that, you know, it's kind of fun just kind of going back, and I get to explain what, you know, what you may not understand, what was the background from the very, very first movie.
No, I am really happy we got you on, Jay. Thank you for everything you contributed, because a lot of this we probably would not have been able to touch on.
Especially Han being Han Solo.
Yes.
you have it in the first 5 minutes of the podcast, bud.
I caught that. Oh, man, it was a couple years ago, and I was like, what? Oh my God, I'm going to get his name tattooed on my chest. Amazing.
Well, I think with that, we're going to call it a wrap. As always, you can find us at ButWhyThoughPC on Twitter, Instagram. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. It helps other people find us. It's probably the biggest thing you can do to support us. You can find us on Twitch as well, twitch.tv/ButWhyThough. And you can find me personally on Twitter and Instagram at OhMyMythRandier, and on Twitch, twitch.tv/OhMyMythRandier. Adrian, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at SuperReese93, SuperRRuiz93, and on the But Why Though Twitch every now and again.
And Jay, how about you?
Are you
able to find you?
Yeah, I guess I set up a Twitter account, but I don't really check it. But if you want to leave me Twitter messages or whatever, it's Twitter and Instagram is at Steezmoso, STEEZ, Steez, MOSO.
give us your car club one more time. That way, Scion people out there.
Yeah, so anyone in the San Antonio, New Braunfels, Austin area, it's Team Cyanide, Team T-E-A-M, Scion, S-C-I-O-N, I-E-Y-E-D, Team Cyanide San Antonio chapter. So big shout out to them, and big shout out to you guys for bringing me on.
Thanks, and I will include all of the car club stuff for people who want to get involved or don't know how in our show notes when we post this episode. So thanks again, and yeah, that was a great episode, guys. Oh wait, hold on, we gotta get Adrian loud and clear.
Oh, salute me, familia. Go get some Coronas. See you next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye.